Welcome to the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, a weekly podcast for anyone interested in the freestanding ambulatory surgery industry. This week's episode is sponsored by Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies, a full-service regulatory compliance consulting firm serving the ambulatory surgery industry, and Eden Group Development, publisher of the ASC Regulatory Compliance series of books by John Gailey.
Well, hello, and welcome to this week's episode of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey. I am Judy D'Ambrosio, and I want to welcome you here today. If you're one of our current listeners, thank you so much for staying with us. And if you're new, well, welcome, and we're glad you're here. We have a really good show set up for today, but we'll have to get started. So as we start every one of our podcasts, we start with the news of the industry, some small tidbits and small pieces of information that you may find helpful. So we'll get right started in on that. The first thing I want to remind you of, in case you are unaware, it is not too early to register for the ASC conference in Boston, Massachusetts in this coming April. For those of you that haven't been to a conference like that, I want you to give it some thought because you get to really hear from the leaders in the industry. And this year, there's more than 17 different sessions that you can attend, two full days of infection prevention sessions, well worth your time, well worth your attention, and you can register starting today at the ASCA website, www.ascassociation.org. Go through it, look at the brochure, see if it's something you might be interested in. And again, could not be a better use of your time. Second thing I want to remind people about is if you're currently using the ASC Center's benchmarking tools, you have until the end of this month, January 31st, to get your information in. If you're not yet subscribed to this benchmarking, again, that's something you can find on the ASCA Association website. And if you are using them, remember that your fourth quarter information needs to be submitted by the 31st of this month. Okay. The last thing I wanted to share with you while I had your attention was the new CDC requirement for ASC-8 reporting. So as most of you are aware, as of October of last year, the Center for Disease Control has introduced a new requirement, the ASC-8 influenza vaccination coverage for healthcare personnel. So NHSN users will have to go in and accept an updated agreement to participate for this particular set of reporting. Even if you've already submitted one before, the new form will be submitted electronically through NHSN. And it was supposed to be available shortly after it was announced in November or December, but it is now available. It became available on January 23rd. And the CDC will send reminders to those facilities, to their primary contacts, to remind them that this has become available. And each facility's primary contact is required to accept these new terms, the new form for ASC-8 influenza reporting, and they have to accept that by April 14th. So you have some time, but you will have to go in, log in to your NHSN reporting site, and accept this new form in order to comply with the new reporting. So, John, I was talking to our listeners about the conference in Boston in April. Will you be speaking while we're there?
Yes, I'll be doing three sessions during the conference, and one is going to be the CASC review course, another one on benchmarking, and another one on surveys, which is pretty much a tradition that I speak about those three topics each year. I also, interestingly, I had an opportunity to talk to Gina Thronberry, who is the Director of Education and Clinical Services Clinical Affairs for the ASC Association while I was at the ASCA 2018 winter seminars. So I thought maybe I would throw that in right now because she talks a little bit about what is coming up in ASCA 2018.
Oh, I'd love to hear from her.
Okay, let's listen. I'm here at ASCA 2018 winter seminars in Las Vegas, and I have with me Gina Thronberry, Director of Education and Clinical Affairs for the Ambulatory Surgery Center Association, ASCA. Welcome, Gina.
Thank you, John.
So I have been talking to a number of attendees here, and they have all raved about this conference. Thanks for all the hard work that you and the staff at ASCA put into it. But I understand that you have something even bigger coming up. Can you talk a little bit about ASCA 2018?
Sure. Well, thank you first for complimenting our winter seminar. It's definitely a team effort with the Education Committee, and we're very excited. Boston 2018 will be April 11th through 14th. This year, we have some different formats we're offering. We have panel discussions, roundtable discussions. We are also offering advanced sessions this year. We've had quite a bit of feedback from attendees wanting that. We're very excited to be offering the CASC review course again. For individuals who would like to take the CASC review course, that would be offered on Wednesday, April the 11th. Then we'll be offering a pencil paper CASC exam on Saturday morning in Boston. That'd be Saturday morning, April 14th. We're also excited this year to be offering 2 full days of infection prevention education. Those individuals who are interested in applying for the brand new Certified Ambulatory Infection Preventionist credential can come to those classes in order to maintain contact hours in infection prevention in order to set for the exam coming up this October.
That's great. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, John.
That was fabulous. Really, we should get more and more speakers in because that really was a nice insight. The other thing I noticed or that I talked about in the news segment was this new form for the NHSN reporting for the influenza, and they have to go in and sign up for their new form. I want to make sure that they know everything that they need to know about what they need for this. Any insight you'd want to share?
Well, I think one thing that we really need to mention here is that that is far from the only requirement for Medicare reporting. Hopefully our listeners all know about the Medicare quality reporting requirements. If they don't, I encourage them to go to the ASC Association's website. Under their federal regulation section, there's a whole series of information about quality reporting. But there are quite a number of measures that need to be reported on a regular basis to the Medicare program, basically. And those include, the standard measures, which, how many patient burns, patient falls, wrong side surgeries, and hospital admissions that you have, as well as you talked about, the influenza vaccination. There's also requirements for centers that do GI procedures for endoscopy and polyp surveillance and follow-up and the normal colonoscopy in an average risk patients. The ASC 10 surveillance item, which talks about endoscopy and polyp surveillance.
They also have 2 new ones coming up, not in 19, but in 20. They have the ASC 13 and 14.
Which actually are required to be reported during 2018. So we need to remind our listeners that that includes normothermia, which is ASC 13, and ASC 14, unplanned anterior vitrectomies, which I'm sure our eye surgery centers are going to
be very interested in.
Very interested in. I know this is one of those areas that's often controversial with the physicians because an anterior vitrectomy, as we all know, is a known complication. And I'm not sure that everybody is terribly excited about reporting.
Having that. To report that.
We probably should talk about the consequences of not reporting, which is the possible reduction or the reduction in your Medicare reimbursement. So basically what happens if you don't report, this is a pay for reporting, eventually be moving toward a pay for quality. But this is a pay for reporting mechanism at the present time. So as long as you're reporting this information, you're not going to have an impact on your reimbursement rates, which is for the 2-year period afterwards. So this is 2018. These would impact your reimbursement in 2020. So if you're not actively putting this information into the system, reporting this information, you are subject to a decrease in your reimbursement. So we really encourage everybody to do this. This is a very involved process. As you talked about the NHSN, that's one of the processes that you have to do, but you also have to set up your billing system to report ASC 1 through 4, and then you have to log into QualityNet in order to report the other items. So this is quite involved. Sometimes, I know our clients indeed, need some help from us. And in fact, you do. Yep. That work with our clients. So you know the process very well. But it is, if you have any problems, there's plenty of experts to help you out, and the ASC Association is always there also.
That's good. Perfect. Okay, so we're going to move on to the next portion of our show. We're going to do one of our now infamous scenarios to keep you on top of how to be compliant. So we'll take a little break and we'll come back with that scenario for you.
Sounds good.
Did you hear? They just appointed me infection control coordinator.
Congratulations. Although I can't imagine this will keep you very busy. It can't be a very difficult job. We do a really good job of, in containing infections here.
Well, I agree, but, like, for example, I just watched you come out of OR1 and you removed your gloves right away, but you didn't complete the hand hygiene before you came over here to me.
Sweetheart, we don't have to wash our hands after we take the gloves off. Maybe you should do some more research before you start.
Well, let's just see. Dr. Rosen is coming out of OR2 right now. Let's see what he does. Here, watch. See? He removes his gloves, removes his bouffant, and washes his hands before going into OR3.
Figures, he's such a do-gooder.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, I did notice that he did not change that mask he was wearing. Did you notice how it was just hanging there below his mouth as he scrubbed his hands? He really needed to remove that, too, and put on a new one.
You realize if we all did it your way, it would cost a lot more money and a lot more time.
Well, I do realize that, but that's not what's important here. What's important here is that we reduce our risk of infections.
Well, gloves and those silly bouffants don't grow on trees, you know.
I know that, but they're necessary since you brought it up. That skull cap you're wearing isn't really appropriate either.
What are you talking about? It's awesome. It has the Game of Thrones theme.
Yes, Doctor. It is awesome. But you have a bunch of hair hanging out from the back there, and your sideburns are showing, and frankly, you cannot convince me that that stays sterile from one room to another.
I'm not sure I'm going to like having you in this role. Who appointed you again?
The medical director and the QAPI committee. See, we all know what a good job we do here, and I'm very proud of the fact that post-operative infection reports come back so low. In fact, you have the best record overall.
Oh, I just checked none and sent it back. I don't have any time for that.
Oh, for God's sakes. Okay, John. So this poor girl really does have her work cut out for her here. Where should we even begin?
Well, let's talk about what the role of an infection prevention coordinator is, because it's a very important role. And infection prevention is one of those areas that is cited most frequently during surveys. So we have to take it seriously, and the infection control coordinator has to be actively involved in looking into infections and making sure that we're preventing infections. So the coordinators, first of all, they have to have some type of education, specifically in ambulatory surgery infection control. Right now, there is an ARN course that you can take online with about 6 credit hours, which is really the bare minimum you need to have in order to be an infection control coordinator. And most surveyors will accept that. But that's really considered entry level. We are in the process right now of introducing a new program, ASC Association and CAS and BAS, the Board of Ambulatory Surgery Accreditation, is introducing the CAIP program, which is a CAIP, the Certified Ambulatory Infection Preventist program, which will be a certification. Now, certification is not required to be an infection preventist, but it certainly demonstrates an involvement or a knowledge about the area. Probably more importantly is that with the introduction of this, there'll be a lot of new training programs that will help specifically train infection preventists in infection control in the surgery center setting.
Maybe by doing that, this poor girl could
gain some, you know, strength and knowledge to let these doctors really give her the attention she needs.
So I like to think about infection prevention as three legs in a chair, you know, one of those little...
Three-legged chairs. Stools?
Three-legged stools, yeah.
So
the first leg of that would be actively looking for infections that might have been caused in your surgery center. You do that by following up with the patients after the procedure, reminding them to call the surgery center and the doctor if they do have any signs of an infection, and also just surveilling the physician at the end of each month or each quarter, depending upon the frequency that you wish to send out. And what you're doing there is you're asking them if they've had any infections or any other types of complications. And usually you send a report which includes a list of all the procedures that were done during that month, and then they send it back and say yes or no.
And hopefully they don't just say none and send it back.
Exactly, like this doctor here. And what you want to do is follow up on all of those infections to try to determine whether they were as a result of something that happened in the center, or whether it was, as most often is the case, I think, something that was caused by the patient postoperatively, like not following post-op instructions. So that's the first leg of the stool. The second leg is where you have to do surveillance. So a lot of our centers, a lot of surgery centers, have no infections just because of the nature of the procedures or just very good precautions. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't be actively watching for anything that could cause an infection. And that's what we call surveillance. And surveillance is really two parts. The first one is hand hygiene surveillance, like we saw the nurse doing in this particular episode. And then also sharp safety, where you're looking to make sure that they're doing proper sharp safety precautions to avoid any infections being caused by needles, etc. And then the last leg of the stool is environmental. And that is where we look at the environment, the surgical environment, the entire facility you walk through, you know, observe anything that might be a problem, checking for HVAC issues, making sure that you have a proper number of air exchanges in your operating rooms, that the air pressure is in the correct direction, et cetera. So that's environmental, and you should be doing a monthly walkthrough at least with an infection an environmental infection prevention checklist, and making sure you're following up on any issues that you might find while you're doing that walkthrough.
So this is a really important job for this girl.
It is, and they need to take it seriously. And she, you know, it seems like in this episode she's trying. And of course, it is a constant battle. I mean, with the physicians, they're, you know, they want to see things moving quickly. You know, there's this ongoing battle. Well, I've never had any infections. Why do I have to do all of these things? And of course, it's because we're very cautious. We want to make sure that we're taking every steps possible to avoid this, because many of these infections that do occur have very serious consequences. So even the possibility that one person would have it would should be enough for us to do active precautions at all times.
I think it's fabulous now that we're going to have this training, this in this educational program for these infection control preventatives.
Preventionists.
That's not easy.
I know. I have a hard time. It doesn't roll off the tongue very well. But so just to be specific, it's called the Certified Ambulatory Infection Prevent.
See, it isn't easy
program.
For you either.
No, I'll keep practicing. And if anybody's more is interested in learning more about the program and the different training that would be available, please go to www.aboutcape, that's aboutcaip.org, and you'll get a lot more information. And obviously, if you are an infection preventist in your organization, avail yourselves of all the opportunities for training that is going to be coming through when under this new program through the ASC Association. And certainly our weekly podcast here, we'll be doing quite a bit of work also on doing a job of keeping you up to date with what's going on in the infection prevention area.
Yes, I agree. And although it may not make your doctors more well-behaved, it will certainly give you the strength and knowledge to know you're coming from the right place.
That's right.
Well, okay, that was pretty informative. So what we're going to do here is take a little break, and when we come back, we will do one of our listener questions. Stay tuned. Well, this is my favorite part of our episodes, as you know. So this is the part of our podcast where we go through our listener questions. And I found a very, very appropriate question for this particular week. So get this. This is coming from Lisa, and she has a center in Pennsylvania. And she's asking, we have an ongoing issue with the physicians arguing about whether it is better to wear a paper bouffant or one of the far more attractive skull caps. We have doctors on both sides of this issue, and I would like to be able to give them a definitive answer. Yes, Lisa, wouldn't we all? Okay, John, I'm giving this to you because this can go either way, and I'm really actually interested to hear what you think about what's become really quite a volatile debate out there.
Yes, and you're going to try to tie me down to an answer, aren't you?
Well, you know, I think we'd like that. It would certainly make our lives easier.
So this is probably the most debated topic right now. And so here's my feelings about this. I think we spend so much time focused on the use of the bouffant versus the surgical, the skull cap, shall we say, that we're not focusing on what those two hair coverings do. The purpose behind the hair covering is to cover the hair. So the problem with the skull cap often is that some of your hair is not covered. And that's what we're, as surveyors, that's what we're citing you for, is not having all of the hair covered. Not that you're wearing a skull cap particularly. So for example, a bald person wearing a skull cap is absolutely no problem because there's no hair to cover. But I once saw during a survey, I saw a CRNA who was wearing a skull cap, and she had her ponytail sticking out behind, you know, that little section in the back of the skull cap.
Well, that's kind of counterproductive, don't you think?
And that's exactly why that skull cap was not appropriate. Now, if she had covered the skull cap with another bouffant, that would have been okay. Now, listen, I don't particularly like wearing bouffants either. I think I also look much better in a skull cap. But we need to focus on what the ultimate outcome is, covering all of your hair. Hair is where, you know, potential problems occur, and we want to keep it all covered. So if you can effectively wear a skull cap and keep all of your hair under control, I personally, as a surveyor, don't have a particular problem with that. But if you can't keep that hair under control, then you're going to, you know, have to find some other way of covering that up.
So it really is a debate about whether you look foolish or that you look like Derek Shepherd. It has to do with whether or not the hair is covered. And in our episode earlier, there was a question about sideburns. I don't think either one will cover those effectively.
That's correct. You're going to have some form. You know, there are things that you can purchase that will cover the sideburns. And this is, especially during the wintertime here, the last couple surveys I've done, we've had issues where I'm walking through and people have new sideburns, new, you know, hair growth on their faces, men, I'm assuming.
Let's hope so.
Yeah. And they're not covering it properly. And that, speaking of somebody that used to have a beard, trust me, you do want to cover that up because God only knows what is inside of that that beard. So yes, men, if you have some type of hair covering on other than a mustache or your the top of your head, you're going to have to find some way of covering that up and talk to your infection preventist.
There you go.
We'll have various options available to you to do that.
Okay, well, I appreciate it. You know, that's a clear answer. If the hair is covered, you're good. Doesn't matter what you're using. And if you find that you have hair showing, fix it.
That's right. And by the way, if a surveyor asks you this question, or you're in a survey and they're very adamant about that, about, you know, not using a skull cap, this is the argument you bring up, or this is the point that you make. You're going to lose that argument if you're not covering that hair. But if you demonstrate that you're covering everything and they're, you know, with the skull cap, it's going to be hard for them to find a way to cite you for inappropriate use of that hair covering.
Well, that's good advice. Thank you. Okay, everyone. Well, that's our show for this week. Please come back. Stay tuned for next week. John and I will be here again trying to go over the many questions you have. And remember, send us those questions. We love it to hear from you. We're going to try to answer every single one before our time is up here. So remember, we're here waiting for you to give you the help you need. And we hope to see you next week.
Sounds good.
this podcast is an educational and operational tool and is not intended to be a comprehensive resource for all the rules, regulations, and standards that an ambulatory surgery center must meet. The advice provided should not be considered as, nor does it constitute, legal advice or opinion. When reviewing specific situations involving legal and regulatory issues, attorneys and other professionals should be consulted. This has been a production of Eden Group Development, all rights reserved. We would like to thank this week's sponsors, Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies, one of the nation's leading regulatory compliance and financial oversight firms. For free consultation, contact John Gailey today at 585-594-1167 or through email at info@ah-strategies.com. Our other sponsor today is Eden Group Development, which publishes ASC Regulatory Compliance Series, the ASC industry's leading books, including The Survey Guide for ASCs, a guide to the CMS conditions for coverage, and interpretive guidelines for ambulatory surgery centers, and Ambulatory Surgery Center Governance, a guide for ambulatory surgery center owners and governing body members. These must-have books are available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble or directly from the publisher at reg-books.com. That's reg-books.com. If you are interested in advertising or sponsoring with the ASC podcast with John Gailey, please email us at info@ascpodcast.com. We would love to hear your questions and comments. Please email us at comments@ascpodcast.com.